Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author to Author. We talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. That's a true thing. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life. Yes, that's right. All kinds of stuff. Oh, my good friend R.J. Jeffries has a wonderful piece in there. Now, I highly recommend you check out about how writing and reading sort of redeemed his childhood. Beautiful. And, my conversation with we've got video interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. My conversation with Bruce Van Dusen, the commercial director, is up there. In fact, his book, 60 Stories About 30 Seconds, that just came out finally. I interviewed him before it was released. That's just out. And as is, actually, Cecilia Aragon, the pilot memoirist. Remember her? We had her on the show a few weeks back. Her book just came out. So, you know, anyway, all kinds of interviews. Check it out at authormagazine.org. And we're funded by the people over at the Pacific Northwest Writers Association. They've been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. And, the conference, their virtual conference this year, it's coming up this weekend. I will be participating in it. I will be having a conversation live on Saturday afternoon with the wonderful Laura Munson. Also, Britt Bennett, who I interviewed a couple months back, the number one New York Times bestselling literary writer. Well, she is going to be the keynote, and I guess I'll be there for that as well, maybe asking her a few questions and sort of hosting that. So, you know, check it out. Hope you're going to be there. I don't know what, you kind of see each other at these virtual conferences. You do if you stop into the same virtual room. If you're going to be at the Alaska Writers Conference, I'll be there as well, teaching fearless writing. I'll be there, you know, virtually again, teaching fearless writing and fearless marketing. So wherever you are, I hope I see, maybe I see you at both places. Maybe you're really ambitious. You go to two conferences same weekend. Hey, you never know. Anyway, if you want to learn more about the PNWA, you can go to PNWA.org. Yes, that's what you can do. So yeah, here we go. Another great suspense writer, man. I get so many good suspense writers on this show. And Brad, I'm so glad I got him on. Brad Parks. He is the only writer to have won the Seamus, Nero, and Lefty Awards, three of American crime fiction's most prestigious prizes. His novels have been translated into 15 languages and have won critical acclaim across the globe, including stars from every major pre-publication review outlet. He's a graduate of Dartmouth College, and he's a former journalist with the Washington Post and the Newark, New Jersey Star Ledger. And he's got a brand new book out, just came out this month, called Interference. It's fascinating, highly readable, of course. He's here to talk about it and all the other things in his life. Brad, welcome to the show.
Bill, good to be here. Thank you for that introduction. You forgot to mention I can also juggle and catch grapes in my mouth. But other than that, I think you've covered everything I've ever done.
I can juggle too. Not great. I can only do three balls, but I can do three balls. Now, the grapes in your mouth, does somebody else have to throw them? Or is it part of the juggling?
I mean, obviously, I can throw them myself, but that's kind of less challenging. It's better when you have somebody else throw them. But yeah, you know, we all have to have, I call them our Rain Man talents, you know, those talents that are just, you know, bizarre and kind of inexplicable. And mine is that I catch grapes in my mouth. If we happen to see each other, maybe like across a parking lot, we need to stay distance and everything like that. You toss a grape in the air, chances are pretty good I'm going to be able to catch it.
You're like a trained seal. But you can also, you can sing, can't you, Brad? You like to sing a little.
Allegedly,
is true?
I can sing. Yes. I do. I do love to sing. So like, for example, last week I finally sent my kids off to school for the first time in 6 months, whatever it was. They go to this little tiny school where all the children have to wear masks. And not that I haven't just loved having my children in the next room while I'm trying to write, but sending them off to school that first morning made me sing, "Oh, what a beautiful morning. What a beautiful day. I got a beautiful feeling. Everything's going my way."
That's
thank
very
you.
Nice.
Thank you.
Very good.
The only problem with that is trying to pick a key out of the air sometimes, and yeah, things can go terribly awry.
You know what? I've been trying to teach myself to sing recently, so I understand. I was spent years thinking I couldn't sing for anything, and I'm okay. I'm hanging in there. So that's I understand. Start in the wrong place. So all right. So Brad, writing, about writing.
Sure. Yes, about writing.
Oh yeah. This year we're here to talk about that. So journalism is where it started. Is this correct?
Right.
That was your first professional writing. And were you doing that straight out of college?
Oh, I was doing that well before college. I got my first job when I was 14 years old.
What?
I always say I got into writing for the money and the sex because it was this I answered an ad in my weekly hometown paper, and the job, it paid 50 cents a column inch, which meant I could get paid more money to write for the local paper than I could babysitting. And it involved covering the Ridgefield High School girls basketball team, which
at the age of
14, exactly. I was short. I was pudgy. My voice hadn't changed yet. Like, I didn't have a lot going for me, but I figured like, if I was the guy who could put these girls' names in the paper, they would have to talk to me. And then I would be able to get dates. And like, this was my genius foolproof plan.
Did that seriously come into the calculation? Did that seriously?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Come on. I was a 14-year-old nerd. I was going to do anything I could to try and get a date.
Funny.
Of course, when I first learned that, not all of my writing goals would be achieved in this life, which is an important thing to learn early on, I think.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, you're 14 and someone's paying you money to write. I think psychologically that has a huge effect because it begins demystifying it just a little bit, right? It starts feeling like just another job you can do.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And it kind of just I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, honestly, Bill. Like, writing is what I do for money. I mean, it really, and I think being a journalist really did that more than anything, because up until I was 34, I was a full-time journalist. So I was, writing novels in the morning and being a journalist. But like, as a journalist, you don't get to go and say, editor, I don't feel like writing a story today. I'm not inspired to go cover that fire or that murder or that baseball.
Right.
It's not really an option. Like, you go no matter how you feel, no matter, whether you're up or you're down or you're left or you're right. And you go and you write, and it was, and the lesson you take out of that, of course, is that, once you get into it and the muscles kick in, I always say, by the end of the book, I never knew whether at word 45,000, I was feeling like writing that day, or I was, it all kind of smooths out. So I think journalism taught me that, to really treat it like a job. And yes, it's an art, but it's also a craft. And so if it's a craft, just get your butt to work.
Well, I will tell you, I tell my students, and I don't say this to brag, but this is just the kind of psychological reality of writing. I write every day, and I am never actually in the mood at the moment I sit down. Like, that's not, but that's seriously, like, I have to find that every day. And it doesn't take me long usually, but if you are waiting to be in the mood, you can undo yourself believing that you should, that you're going to be ready to go at that moment. And I'm just not at that moment, even though I'm there at the same time every single morning,
So before the pandemic, I always used to write at a Hardee's restaurant, which I don't think they have in the Pacific Northwest. Hardee's, yes.
Yes.
I think in the West, you do have Hardee's out there.
Well, no, I grew up in Rhode Island, and I believe we had Hardee's out there.
So it's a fast food burger chain.
And
they are famous. So it's more prevalent in the Southeast. I think out West it's known as Carl's Jr., but it's the same idea. One of the things that Hardee's is famous for is their biscuits, right? And biscuit maker gets there every morning at 4 o'clock to start making the biscuits, right? And I typically would get to my Hardee's, and the Hardee's just sort of became my writing place about 6 o'clock in the morning, right? So I'm already lazy compared to the biscuit maker.
Right.
And I always just say to myself, like, the biscuit maker never says, I don't feel like making biscuits today. They make the damn biscuits.
Yeah, but making a biscuit, look, here's the thing. This is another thing I tell my students is, like, I made a living bartending and waiting tables for a while. And I could make a living. I could do a fine job as a waiter if I wasn't in the mood. And I never had to be in the mood. I could just do it. I could kind of like chop wood. But
right,
for writing,
right.
at some point, I had to get in the groove. I couldn't just fake it.
Sure.
At least I can't. I can't fake it. Maybe you can, Brad. But I don't think it's possible to fake it with writing. I don't think it is. Not
no,
creative
I think
writing.
I think it shows. But I think the main point is to not treat yourself like you're so precious, right?
Yes.
To not
– yes.
To not – yes, to you use the word demystify or mystify, whichever version of that
demystify,
you use. Like, I think you do have to demystify the process a little bit. And, you know, and don't get me wrong. There are parts of writing that are truly special and magical. You know, the where did that idea actually come from? Where did that character – how was that character created? Where did that – you know, like all that – you know, and some of that you'll never be able to answer. You won't know. You know, but a lot of that mystical stuff still does come from the very simple act of putting your ass in the chair and putting your hands on the keyboard and getting to work. And, you know, and when what's more, when you do that, I always find that, you know, so you sure, let's just say you have to force yourself to write every day, right? But when you do that, you eventually do get yourself into a groove. By the way, you have to keep the internet off. You have to stay off your phone. You know, I'll spare you all those lectures, but they're very important. So, you know, eventually you get into the groove, and you kind of got to drag yourself in kicking and screaming, but you get there. But then the magical thing is, you know, however long you last in the chair. And I'm like 4 hours is about max.
Later that day,
you know, that's it. Yeah. And that's, you know, the words stop making sense, and I'm kind of done. But later that day, if I have been engaged in my story, I am working out other aspects of my story, right? Like the solutions come to me, the problems don't seem so daunting, versus if I haven't forced myself to get into that mood, chances are later in the day I'm not going to have that little bit of magic.
Yeah.
So it all does start with that act of discipline. And I talk a lot to writers about discipline and about grit and about saying, like, I am a hard worker, and making that kind of part of your mantra, right?
Right.
Where, like, nobody says you're going to be able to be a doctor and just be lazy, right? And sit on the couch and not – no, you have to work very hard to become a doctor. Well, why should it be any less demanding to become an author, right? Why should we expect less of ourselves? You know, because, by the way, there are a lot fewer people in the world who can make a living as an author than make living as doctors. So, you know, this is a hard thing, and we should expect hard work out of ourselves. Sorry, Bill, you're getting me wound up already.
No, it's good.
This is a favorite topic of mine.
This is what this conversation's about, is what does it take for a person? Because the thing is that – so you're a journalist, right? Now, the thing about it being a journalist is, yeah, you got to do it every day, but someone says, Brad, go do that.
Right.
And when you come back, I need 800 words. Boom. But you're being assigned things. You're being told what to write. Now, you're at the point in your career where you get a – where you probably have to hand in ideas to your editor, and maybe they clear it. I don't know. But, you know, you're kind of at this point
Bill, I have not been a journalist since 2008.
In terms of your editor, your publishing editor, you know, maybe you have
– Oh, right.
Right. You know, maybe you're on some kind of a deadline with them. But the thing
is,
it comes from you. You know, you are the idea factory, and it's so self-motivated, and it's just a different, it's such a different, in fact, when I coach people, I have to teach them that discipline. It's like, you're not going out to a job now where someone's going to be there to help get you to do something. It's all coming from you. And that psychologically is not easy for a lot of people. Just that it's all coming from.
Yeah,
them.
No, I always get jealous of people who will say, you know, who have like kind of ordinary big boy, big girl jobs, whatever.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, all I did today was put out fires. And I think to myself, you lucky son of a gun, because all I ever do is I have to start the fire every single damn day.
Yes.
I have to start the fire. I wish somebody else. Sorry, I shouldn't use fire metaphors in the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
I realize right now that's a little tender, but it's still, it's true. You know, but the thing is, that's a muscle too. I really do believe that, Bill, like the having ideas and the thinking about that. And like, so actually an author friend of mine, Jamie Mason, who's absolutely a wonderful writer. You should have her on the show sometime.
You know, I may have, and I don't even remember.
Okay. Well, I'm glad this is meaningful to you, Bill, that in a year this conversation will still be imprinted in your brain. But she was challenged by her agent to do some absurd number of book ideas. It was, you know, it was like 100 book ideas or something like that she had to do in 2 weeks. I mean, just ridiculous, right?
Okay.
And so she just started like throwing the ideas out there. And she said she was kind of amazed of like when she was forced to really work that, you know, okay, yeah, you're coming up with 100 ideas. But by the way, if two of those are good, you're set for a long time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, you know, I always say I get about 10 ideas for a book a week and 11 of them are bad. But you know, every once in a while you get one that isn't bad. Right.
If you get one good idea for a book every week, you're cooking, baby.
Oh yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. You don't, but like, I always like most of my bad ideas, I forget pretty quickly, you know,
sure.
But then there's that one that sticks with you, right? That
right.
one that you kind of keep coming back to, and that's the one you end up writing.
Yeah. No, so this is, so it was Roald Dahl, the great young adult author, children's book author, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, blah, blah, blah. James and the Giant Peach. He talked about you have to sniff around an idea for a little while before you decide it's worth going after. And so talk to me about knowing, because I totally understand this, and I've really had to teach myself to be more disciplined about sniffing around ideas before I dive in, to decide that, you know, I think this has got some, because you have to know, like, there's something deeper in your interest in that idea.
Right.
So talk to me about how you know, like, yeah, that's something that's going to be worth a year of my attention.
Yeah. So, and I do believe in, yeah, you do kind of have to have a lot of ideas rolling around in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like in various phases of fermentation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and kind of like if you give them that time to steep. Sorry, I'm mixing my metaphors. I'm making
right.
booze. I'm making tea. I'm all over the place.
Right.
but you know, I really do think that like you're kind of like working on them all the time, right? And then every once in a while, it's the ideas you come back to that, and every time when you come back to it, it gets a little larger, and it gains some mass. It gains some mass, and then it becomes this like big thing that you're like, God, I just have to write that book someday.
Right.
So I think it's a gradual process, and yeah, I have very seldom. It's happened now and again that I, you know, just start cold on a book that I just thought of, and like boom, I'm gonna write that. You know, most of my ideas are things that have kind of been rolling around in my head for a few years, and that have finally, you know, attained that critical mass that, all right, it's time to start working on that one.
Right. Yeah, I think that sounds about right. It sounds about right that you feel like, yeah, now it's time. It just keeps coming back and just keeps coming back.
Right.
Just kind of won't go away. Now, the most current book, which
this is a good segue
yeah,
though, believe it or not. Like the current book is exactly one of those books for me.
The one that hung around in your head for a couple of years before you finally wrote it?
Yeah. So the book is called Interference, for those in the listening audience who don't know. And it is a book where one of the star players is quantum physics.
Yeah.
Don't be scared, author people. It's okay. We're going to be all right. We'll hold your hand and get through it. But that was a book that I had actually, in varying forms, I had kind of approached it at least three other times. And I know this because I would go back and look at my notes of like, oh, yeah, that was that time that I started to try to write that book and it just didn't work out. Oh, that was that time. You know, like, because I had this, you know, this file of physics books that I would read. And you know, it's like, oh yeah, that was the time in 2013 when I tried it. There's the time in 2015 when I tried it. And there, you know, but it was a book where I think for a long time I had been trying to figure out, all right, how am I going to fit my book to the science? How am I going to fit my book to the science? And then I finally got this brainstorm. No. I'll fit the science to my book. Like that's a much better way to do it. And then you have that little brainstorm, and suddenly you're off and running.
And so this is about it's entanglement. Is it quantum entanglement? What's the actual term for it?
Yeah. So actually, the actual principle that we delve into is quantum entanglement,
which I've always thought is so freaking cool. The moment I heard about it, I thought I'm all on board with this because it's so
it's
beyond comprehension.
It's weird and wonderful. Yeah. So for those who don't know, it is basically every now and then two particles can be born entangled. And when that happens, you can separate them by any distance you want to, and they remain coordinated with each other, where you do something to one particle and the other immediately signals that it feels it, no matter
right.
how far apart they may have traveled.
Yeah.
Right. So it's, it's this crazy concept that, by the way, has been proven experimentally beyond the shadow of a doubt. Right. Like when this was first theorized, Einstein thought it was garbage, you know, because you have this interaction that seems to be happening faster than the speed of light because it's instantaneous. Right.
Right?
And he's like, well, nothing can be happen faster than the speed of light.
Right.
Well, it turns out Einstein was wrong. Entanglement is real. And so the what if that drives this book, and this is admittedly the me fitting my the science to the book part, is, okay, so if we can have particles be entangled, by the way, experimentally, we've shown that systems of particles can be entangled, molecules can be entangled.
Yeah.
If all that is true, what about human beings?
Why not, baby?
Being entangled.
Right.
You know, and haven't we all, Bill, felt that sense of like, being so connected with someone, right? Like it's twin sense, or it's, you know, people who suddenly realize something bad has happened to their lover or their sister or their best friend or whatever. Like, like, don't we kind of intrinsically know that, that this is kind of possible in human beings?
Yeah.
So it's
yep.
exploring that idea, the entanglement of human beings that may be possible.
See, I happen to love this for, on a lot of levels. I'm kind of a mystical guy. And also, there's something about the writing process. I know it's work and I know it's craft. You got to get your butt, blah, blah, blah. But on some level, you have to give over that there's something happening that you're not really in charge. Let me put it this way. I cannot – you know who the songwriter Lou Reed is? You familiar with Lou Reed?
Of course.
He wrote, right. I saw him interviewed by Elvis Costello before Lou Reed passed away. And he started talking about songwriting. And he said, here's the thing. He said, when a song is coming to me, I know how to write a song. He said, but when the song isn't coming to – but this is the second part. This is really true. He said, but when a song is not coming to me, I could no more write a song as build a car. And I really got it. It's like I know what to do with something when I've been given it, but I can't manufacture what is given to me. I know how to open myself up to let it in. And I know that sounds kind of woo-woo for some people.
It
but
does
I don't
sound
know how
kind
to describe
of woo-woo,
what's
but
actually
it's,
happening.
Bill, I feel you, man. I think it's so true. Like I can always remember back when I was a no-nonsense journalist where you know everything had to be double-sourced and backed up with documents.
Right.
And I would hear fiction people say this. You know, they would always be – I'd be at some conference where there happened to be a fiction writer. And, you know, and somebody would raise their hand and would say, oh, esteemed person of letters, how do you know what happens next in your book? And the esteemed person of letters would always say, well – the characters tell me what's going to happen next, right? And I'd always think to myself, yeah, do your characters tell you you're a nutbag? Because that's what you sound like right now.
Yeah, you see.
And then I started writing fiction, and Bill, they started talking to me, man.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I remember the first scene where it happened, and this is a series that I wrote. I had six books in this series about an investigative newspaper reporter, of course, and where I actually had him, and this is all set in inner city Newark, and in order to convince these gang members that he was not a member of law enforcement, he had to smoke marijuana with them. Now, this was back when marijuana was illegal, of course, So I have this basically straight-laced reporter guy smoking marijuana, right? And then I'm like, okay, well, this scene is over, and it's time to get up and move him to the next scene, so come on. And he's sitting in the chair, and he's looking at me like, no, man, I'm staying here for a while.
I got to say some stuff.
I got some munchies. Do you have any? You know, and it's like, wow. It's like, you know, I'm like, no. His name was Carter Ross. Carter, come on, get up, we're going. And well, the next thing I know, he's stumbling all over the room. He's slamming into walls. You know, and it's like, wow, the woo-woo stuff is real. Like these are I'm even still fascinated by this. And tell me if you've experienced this too, Bill. But I'll be writing a scene and it's just not working. And it's not working. And it's not working. And what the hell is going on? I'm a professional gosh darn writer.
Right.
I should be able to write this dang scene. And inevitably, it is because I am making a character do something. They do not want to do that is not natural to them, that is serving my needs or the story's needs, but it's not serving their needs. And once I figure that out, the scene goes fine. But when you're trying to force it, it just doesn't. And now we both sound like we need to be committed, Bill.
No, but you know what? I'm sick of that. I don't need to, because this is the truth. This is just practical. That as a writer, one of the things you have to learn to do is understand the difference between – the effort required to force a character to do something. I write a lot of memoir now, or try and force a story to focus on certain aspects of the story that I don't want, or to force a word into a sentence, and the effortlessness of the thing the character wants to do, the effortlessness of the story as it wants to be told. You're always, and the quicker you can recognize the difference between resistance and effortlessness, the quicker your work goes. And I had tried forcing many things, and it's painful, and you feel like I feel like a failure, and like I can't do it. And it's all because I'm trying to make the thing do something it doesn't want to do. Oh, it's all about it, baby. Yeah. It's the whole deal.
Yeah, so
you learned that early on.
Yeah, you have to give yourself over to it. Like, oh, say again?
Tell me. So you have to give yourself over to it. Talk about that.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you have to become comfortable with it. And honestly, I was not at first, right? Because I was a journalist. I wanted to be in control. And it's been, you know, this Interference is my 10th novel. And slowly I've kind of realized that I am walking the high wire, and I've got no net, and that's just going to be every novel, right? And you just got to go with it, you know, and you put one foot in front of another, and like, you're going to fall sometimes, and that's part of it too. And, but like kind of trusting in the process and trusting in the characters, and that if you listen to the characters, like your best twists and your best surprises and those really gratifying, wonderful, awesome things that happen in a novel almost always happen when you listen to the characters.
Yep. I you know, like I said, I write a lot of memoir and personal essays. So I'm writing about stuff that happened to me. But if I'm not discovering, if I'm not being surprised, even by stuff that I'm writing about my own life, then it doesn't work. I always am going for the surprise, even in my own life. It's this, the surprise is where the real juice is, I think. That's where the real creativity comes in. Absolutely. In fact, here's something interesting. I just listened to John Lennon being interviewed, an old interview of his, and he was back in the studio, and he said, you know, the thing about songwriting that I like, he said, I like the first time we put the song down and lay it down, and that's fun, you know, hearing the band. He said, but the real juice is when the song comes to me and I'm being inspired. Mm. He said, that's when I feel like I'm 15 again. That's when I feel like this is why I'm doing it, is when it comes to him. And he had the same kind of language as Lou Reed does. And it makes sense.
Yep.
You know, it makes sense.
Well, and it's, you know, to me, it's all about energy, right? And it's all about when am I bringing the most energy to the page? And when, because I really believe that readers feel that energy. Yep. And now again, I'm sounding mystical woo-woo.
No.
But it's like when you are jazzed when you're writing about it, when you're excited, like we started off with the fact that I sing, you know, where I think writing and performing are very, very similar in that, like, you have to be attuned to your audience at all times. And when you're turned on, when you are feeling it, they will feel it too. And that's whether you're on the stage or whether you're on the page.
Yeah, absolutely. I did some theater for a little while, and I still like speaking to audiences, you know, groups. And you have to show up and be present when you act, obviously, even if you're doing the same role again and again. And when you're speaking to people, and I feel the same way with writing, I have to be present. I have to be really present with whatever's happening. I can't be thinking about the past or the future or the bills or politics or sports, blah, blah, blah. I've got to just be present with what happens there, and whether it's fiction or nonfiction. And it's the same thing with, I think when they talk about stage presence, I think that's kind of what it is. It's like you're there. You're all there.
Right.
You're not, you are wandering.
Fully inhabiting the role, the person, you know, and in this case,
whatever.
You know, as an author, you're fully inhabiting the page.
Yeah. You're fully invested in the story. And the thing about writing fiction is that thing you're writing is more real to you at that moment, whatever's happening outside on the street. It's more real to you. It has
Lord
to be
willing.
At that moment, in a way, more real than anything else.
Right, right.
Yeah? Yeah, that's the truth, baby. That's how you do it.
I'm totally with you. Yeah, that's it. So, Bill, this is also easy. This is all they have to do, and then they'll have wonderful novels.
That's right. Well, so let's say people want to learn more about Brad Parks. They can buy your books wherever, I'm sure, but if they want to maybe they want you to come talk to their writing group, or they just want to learn, what's the best way to reach or learn more about you, Brad?
For sure. So I am on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Brad Parks Books. I am on Twitter at Brad_Parks. I am on the internet at www.bradparksbooks.com. Or if, you know, if people have survived half an hour into a podcast, I think I can just say my email address. It's fine. If you send an email to brad@bradparksbooks.com, you will get me answering. And I love to hear from people, especially now, Bill, because as you can probably tell, I'm an extrovert. And this damn pandemic is killing me. Okay, like I need people to talk to. I need to interact. I need to, you know, because that's you know, for me, that's where a lot of the energy comes from. Right? Is bouncing things off people. Is talking with readers. Is, you know, just having that wonderful interaction where I may be asking them stories about their lives or things like that. Little do they know, or perhaps they do know, I'm going to be stealing what they say.
Right.
And using it in a future novel. Like I'm shameless about that, and I always inform my friends and family, like, if you do not want to see it in a novel someday,
don't tell me,
okay?
That's
just
right.
Don't tell me, because I'm not gonna, if it's a good story, I'm not gonna be able to resist using it. Like, I'll change the details. It will not feel exactly like your story, but I thrive on that stuff.
All right, I got one more question for you, Brad.
Sure.
Before I let you go, and what I'd like you to do is finish this sentence. If writing has taught you anything, it's taught you what?
It has taught me the power of persistence, Bill. Like I really do believe that, you know, this writing thing, it's nobody masters it quickly, or if they think they have, they're probably doing it wrong. And that writing is really about trying to make it so. And it depends on where you are in the writing process, right? But especially if you're early on, you should be looking at things you wrote a year ago or 2 years ago and say, that is utter crap. Thank God I'm so much better now, right? And I think that's the goal throughout the life of a writer, to be able to always look back at your old stuff and say, God, that's garbage. I do so much better now.
Right.
And I think the only way you do that is to keep at it and to pour that energy in every single day. I mean, but this is one of the good things about what we do, Bill, is like, we're never, you know, I think until a fiction writer gets so old and senile that they can no longer make sense of the words, like, we're always improving, right? And we're like, that better book is still always out there. And I love that fact. I think that, like, I'm 46 years old, and I feel like I'm nowhere near my prime as a fiction author.
You're just getting started.
Exactly. And it's exciting thinking that all still lies ahead.
That's great. Thank you so much, Brad. Congratulations on the book and on all the others that are forthcoming, I'm sure.
Bill, thanks very much. Great being on with you.
Oh, you're very welcome. That's it, people. Persistence. Stay with it. Stay with it. Just gets better and better and better. It does. It does indeed. I will be back again next week with some fabulous guests. I want to thank my producer, RJ Jeffries, and to all of you out there. Hey, voting has started. Go get it. My Brad himself, he came from Virginia, and so he started voting. So if you can do it, do it. Do it. Yes, indeed. And go find something you love and do that.